There we go. Apologies for not being here last week, but thanks to Lenny for stepping in. Always appreciate that, Lenny. It's good to have someone you can turn to and depend basically all the time. But just to recap on where we left off, because it was a fortnight ago, we talked about our foe. Who is our foe?
Satan,
the devil. Okay. And we said that our foe is formidable. And this is what we looked at. We said this: the goal of Satan is to destroy God's people and discredit the cause of Christ. He is not to be taken lightly. He is real. He was an angel, the highest of all created beings, who rebelled against God out of pride. And we read these scriptures, 1 Peter 5 and 8. Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. And Jude 9. Michael the archangel, when he disputed with the devil and argued about the body of Moses, did not dare pronounce against him a railing judgment, but said, the Lord rebuke you. And then we talked about the reality that Satan is real. He's not a myth. He is a real personality or spirit. Then we looked at, who is Satan? A created spirit, an angel, a cherub, the highest of all created beings. Where did he come from? This is where we're starting tonight, by the way. He came from heaven, okay? In other words, in the book The Invisible War, Ingram is stating this, that he had a heavenly estate, okay? A heavenly estate. And you can read that in Jude chapter 6. It talks there about Satan's heavenly estate. Now, the prophet Isaiah, he gave a tremendous insight into where Satan came from. If you want to look at it, it's found in Isaiah chapter 14, verses 12 to 15. Isaiah 14, 12 to 15. If someone finds it, the first one, would you please read it out? It doesn't matter what translation you read from. Isaiah 14, 12 to 15. Anybody got it?
Isaiah 14.
Verses 12 to 15.
How you have fallen from heaven, O morning star, son of the dawn. You have been cast down to the earth, you who once laid low the nations. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit enthroned on the mount of assembly, on the utmost heights of the sacred mountain. I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you were brought down to the grave, to the depths of the pit.
Right. So Isaiah, in that prophecy, tells us exactly, doesn't he, where the devil came from. How thou art fallen, and it says, this is the King James Version, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Now, you were reading from the NIV, I think, Lenny. O Lucifer. Now, the NIV says the morning star. And the King James says, O Lucifer, son of the morning. So Satan, he wasn't just your ordinary angel, if you like. He was special. His beauty seems to be almost unmatched in heaven. And yet he fell. Now, he didn't fall on his own, did he?
No.
Now, there's a bit of ambiguity about what happened whenever Satan was fallen from heaven. Now, Jude 1 and 6 says this: the angels who did not keep their proper domain, and it talks about, but left their abode. So, in other words, Satan didn't just, he wasn't thrown down by himself. He took others with him. And there's a reference to that in Revelation 12 and verse 4. Some say it may not be, it can be a bit vague maybe, but you decide for yourselves. But in Revelation 12 and 4 it says this, his tail drew, and it's talking of Satan, his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to earth. So it is reckoned, and there's other books, but they're not in canon. I think it might be the book of Enoch. I think, I'm not 100% sure about that. But there's other books that never didn't make it into the canon of scripture. But they talk a bit more about this, about the fall of Satan. But it seems from that verse that there were a third. It says the stars. Now, Satan was a star, the morning star. So whenever he was cast out, he did not just leave by himself. And if you read 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, Peter talks in this language. God, I'm not quoting the whole thing, just part of it. God did not spare the angels who sinned. Okay, so that's another reference, that those angels that sinned, he didn't spare them, he didn't let them stay. They left with Satan. Anne, could you read, please, Matthew 25, and this is Jesus speaking, verse 41.
Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels.
Okay, prepared for the devil and his angels. So again, that's just to back up the fact that Satan does not work exclusively on his own. Now, you might think, well, we know that. But I wonder sometimes, do we just get that perception? Or have we like a mental picture that the devil is our adversary and that's it? It's not like that. The devil is our adversary, but he has a lot of help. He has at least a third of the angels in heaven that fell with him. Okay? In Revelation 12, verses 7 to 9, it talks about Satan being literally thrown out of heaven. Why was he thrown out? You sort of read it.
Well, he wanted to make himself God.
He wanted to elevate himself at least to the same as God, but perhaps even higher than God. And isn't that interesting when you think about that and you go way back to Genesis chapter 3, and the only tree in the Garden of Eden that God forbade Adam and Eve to partake of was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And when Eve said that the devil beguiled her, when God said, why are you hiding? Where are you? Oh, well, we were naked, we were afraid, so we hid. Who told you that you were naked? And then they were exposed for what they had done. And how the devil, if you like, the scheme that he used, we're going to talk a wee bit tonight about schemes. The scheme that the devil used to Eve was that by disobeying God, there was a benefit to her in that. And the benefit was that you know what God knows. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And it was that quest for knowledge that seemed, that's okay. I'll have a piece of that fruit. And again, that's how the devil enticed her. By telling her that actually by disobeying God, remember even brought into play, this is another scheme of the devil, doubt. Did God say? And Eve says, well, he did say. And then the devil twisted it. But surely, if you take of this fruit, it's going to be good for you. Because you're going to know basically what God knows. Now, that has to be good. Excuse me. And on that line of thought, can you remember how different languages came into the world? The world at one point, humanity, would you agree, had one language according to scripture? Yeah. So how did it come about that the world was divided up into different languages? What was the event that brought that into being?
Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel, exactly. What was the thinking behind the tower?
What about the tower that
would
reach to heaven?
A tower that would reach to heaven, that they again would have the preeminence. And God, no. There's only one sovereign God, and that's God. And he divided up the nations with different languages. So we can see from Scripture that right from the very beginning, even before the earth was created, Satan was in heaven. He wanted to become as equal or even greater than God, so he was cast down, and he doesn't work on his own. He doesn't. Now, whenever we go to, I almost missed a bit here. This is important, folks. We must respect our foe, but not fear him. Our responsibility is to become, listen to this, acutely aware of Satan's methods, but not to be preoccupied by them. When we become educated about his schemes, remember that wee phrase, by examining his names in Scripture, and we're going to do that probably next week, all of them reveal something of his tactics. So the devil works by schemes, he works by tactics. Okay? It's not, how would I put it, it's not just indiscriminate. It's not as if Satan doesn't work from a playbook or a plan. He does. And what we need to do is find out, you know the way, you ever watch American football and you see the coaches and they have a wee book? And that's their playbook. And what they do is they observe what the opposition is doing, and he's looking for a weakness in their team, in their tactics. So then, and this is what's really infuriating about American football, they spend nearly more time off the pitch or stopped than they do actually playing. And he'd gather them all around him and he'd get his wee book and he'd go, right, we're going to have this play. So the devil doesn't do things indiscriminately. He has a definite plan and he has definite methods, and we need to be educated. We need to know what they are, because whenever you know what his tactics are, when you know what his schemes are, then you can prepare. Then you have knowledge to understand what actually is taking place. In 2 Corinthians 2:11, Paul agrees to forgive a brother along with the Corinthian church in order that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. That's what Paul said. Now, let's be honest. Do you think sometimes that God's people are ignorant? Now, ignorant just basically means lack of knowledge. Sometimes if someone says you're ignorant, they nearly say it in a derogatory way, but that's not what it means. To be ignorant means it's a basic lack of knowledge. How do you think, honestly, God's people are, if you like, educated about the schemes, the tactics, and the methods of the devil? Do you think we're well educated, partially educated, or in some instances, maybe not really educated at all? Ignorant. What do you think? Give me your views. No? You're afraid? Well, I think a lot of the time God's people are not educated. We're not aware. You see, Paul said so that we are not unaware of his schemes, but I think a lot of the time we are unaware of the devil's schemes. Another name for Satan is a destroyer. Now, we'll go into a lot more of his names next week, but think about this. It's basically simple. What is Satan out to destroy?
Humankind.
I want you to narrow it down a wee bit now. Fundamentally, Does Satan like
family? He doesn't like families.
That's now you're getting it, right? So Satan is out to destroy families. Now, take a step back from family. What comes before family? Should, doesn't in today's society. But used to. What?
Marriage.
Okay? So Satan has definite schemes, plans, and they're methodical to destroy marriage, to destroy families, and another one. Well, who was Paul out to destroy?
Christians.
The church?
Yeah.
Okay? Now, there's more you could put in there, like, but these are fundamental things. So Satan, his schemes, his plans, his methods, his goals, they are to destroy the church, because that's God's idea. Every good idea that God had and has, the devil is opposed to it. He's opposed to it. So we know the church and the church's people. Okay? So he's out to destroy the church, the people of God. He's out to destroy marriages, and he's out to destroy families. Anybody here ever seen that happen? Yeah? Yeah, we all have. So, why is he so successful? Did you know? Sorry.
Because people learn, you know, sometimes.
Well, if you knew somebody was out to do you harm, would you let them?
You wouldn't, but some people are gullible.
You see the thought behind it? You see, sometimes we I don't think we take our enemy seriously, or take them seriously enough. As I read earlier there, we must respect our foe, but not fear him. And I don't think at times the people of God gives him that. I don't mean respect him because he's the devil, but because of the power, because of the way he has the ability to destroy these things. And it's real, folks. And as you said, Anne, well, why do people let them? And you said people are gullible.
Yeah, they let their guard down. You know.
They let their guard down. But if they were prepared,
yeah.
If you're prepared for an attack, if you know that your enemy has more artillery than you do, well, then you're not going to send your men running toward them. They're just going to... That happened during the First World War, probably the Second too. You wouldn't do that. You would send in your airplanes and you would drop bombs on them. But sometimes our strategies to defeat and defend against Satan, I think they're flawed, because we're not educated enough in the way that he works. Whenever we talk, or Paul talks about the schemes, a scheme is this. This is in the Greek, by the way. A thing made for a particular purpose, a plan or a scheme for effecting a purpose. So in other words, whenever the enemy attacks you or I, he has a specific purpose in that attack. It's not random. It's not thought out by him, because he observes our lives. Do you think the enemy doesn't know where our weaknesses are?
All right.
Mm-hmm. He knows, all right, Sam. He knows all of our weaknesses. And that's where he will attack us. Any army will always attack the opponent's weakness. And our enemy, and in fact, there's one of the translations, it calls him the great enemy. Most of the translations just say enemy. The King James and the New King James, they use the word adversary. But the most, if not all, really, the ones I looked at, modern translations, they use the word enemy. And it's important that we know our enemy schemes. It really is important, because there's times when we are in a fight. It's the invisible war that's going on around us. and we're in it, and things are falling apart, and maybe somebody's falling out with somebody here, and someone's marriage is on the rocks over here, and there's a wayward child over here that's breaking their mum and their dad's heart. And sometimes we just look at that and go, isn't that awful? But it's what's actually behind that. There's a purpose. And the purpose and the perpetrator is the devil. Because we know he hates anything that God has instituted. And marriage and family are two of the most wonderful things that God instituted. I mean, without going into all the details, you look now even at the whole idea of male and female. Used to be there was no ambiguity there. Now it's totally different. Now there's places in certain countries where if you go into certain facilities, you'll see, this is fact, male, female, and another one, whatever. Whatever. So again, you can see how the enemy has taken something. It says he created what? Male and female. There's no mention of any other gender in there. And yet with all, one of the big topics in our world today is this whole thing about a gender identity. And it's real. But who's promoting it? Where's it coming from? What's the purpose behind it? And you can be sure of this, folks. Any purpose that comes from the devil, it's not good. It's not a good purpose. It'll be a wicked plan. Now, again, in 2 Corinthians 2 and 11, Paul said that we shouldn't be ignorant of his schemes. So we saw what a scheme is. The King James Version uses the word device or devices. Okay, so it would basically read, we are not unaware of the devil's devices. Now, devices is plural. A device is one. So the devil uses different devices, okay, to fulfill his purpose. Anyone ever hear of an IED? IED. If you watch the news,
it's a bomb, isn't it?
Yes, well done, Len. It's a bomb. Literally, it means improvised IE, explosive D, device. All right, IED. Now, follow this. The person who, or persons who created that IED, they created it for a purpose, didn't they? What was the purpose? To kill?
To cause chaos?
Yeah. Another word, maim and destroy. Okay? That's what that device is made to do. That's the purpose behind that device. Now, the word adversary in the King James and the New King James, it says opponent, specifically an enemy. So we have an enemy. If you look at it this way, who goes around planting in the spiritual sense now, not in the literal explosive sense, but he goes around planting spiritual IEDs. And he puts them in a place where it'll do the most damage. These guys who plant these, they don't go out into the mountain region on the top of the mountain and plant their IED. Because that wouldn't serve their purpose. If you look at any IED that has been planted, it's planted in a place where it will cause the most havoc, the most damage, the most death, the most destruction, and maim as many people as possible. So that enemy, if you like, they strategically place that. Folks, every single attack that the enemy throws, whatever scheme he uses or attack against you and I, they're very carefully chosen. They're not just randomly thrown out there. Satan calculates. He looks at our lives. He He sees where our weaknesses are. He sees where we're vulnerable. Folks, there's no human being on this earth, I feel, that is not vulnerable in some sense or in some way. Not one. And the enemy knows this. He knows what button to push. But not only does he know what button to push to cause the most damage to your life and my life, he also is good at his timing. He knows when to push the button. He knows when we're vulnerable. He knows that when we're living close to God, when we are at peace with God, when we're in right relationship with God, that yes, he will attack us. But the fact that we are so close to God, the likelihood of his attack achieving the destruction that he wants is minimalized. That doesn't mean to say he can't have an effect. Yes, he can. But take a life that, for example, someone has lost a loved one and they're struggling with the loss, okay? And they're having problems grieving. You see today, folks, I'm telling you see, because of this whole COVID thing, people that have died, many, many families have not been able to grieve properly. They haven't. They haven't been able to see their loved one before they died. That funeral service I took the other week, the daughter of her mum, she said to me, "Jim, I can't even hug my mum. I can't even hug my mum because she had COVID." They couldn't grieve together for the mom for her husband and the daughter for her dad. The service had to be taken outside at the funeral home. And I'm telling you, folks, that there's people not grieving properly. But when we are in that state of weakness or vulnerability, that's when the devil will come and he'll go, you see now, look, there's your husband, there's your wife, there's your son, there's your daughter, they're gone. And you're all alone. And they try and paint God somehow in a bad light. That why would a loving God allow that to happen, especially now in your life? So the enemy knows when we're weak. He knows when we're vulnerable. And what I would suggest is, and it's nearly time to stop, I haven't got that far, but what I would suggest is that we need to be aware when we're vulnerable. We need to be aware of the circumstances that we are in and how things are going in our life, in our mind. We know the devil loves to mess with our mind. We all know that. But we need to be aware and just stop and say, "Lord, what's this all about? What is going on in my life at the minute? Show me. Am I under an attack of the enemy?" And I mean, he's out to do that. We accept that. But we need to be aware whenever he's coming in a very specific, targeted, I'll use that word, targeted. He targets us. Now, we don't have time tonight to talk about someone specifically being targeted in a very specific way. But God spurs us. We'll start off next week and we will. And I mean, I've looked at this time and time and time again, and I never get tired looking at it. I never get tired talking about this particular person and how Satan specifically targeted him. And it's good for us to have, if you like, a framework to sort of work from. Because if we know, well, this is how he specifically targeted that person, the likelihood is, in my life, those are avenues, those are ways where he could target me as well. And they are, when we see it next week. And again, as we become more aware, more educated, more knowledgeable in the respect, but not the fear of the enemy. We're not to fear him. Because who has given us the victory? God. If Christ be for us, who can be against us? Paul said, we are more than conquerors. Okay? So we're not to fear him. But we're not to be flippant and just think, nah, it's okay. It doesn't bother me. I don't suffer from any attacks from the devil. Well, that's, well, see, if you think that, if we think that, then we're under attack. we're under attack because that is being delusional and not being aware of what's going on round about us. So we'll leave it there, folks, till next week. And when we start, we will pick it up where we finish tonight. I'm trying to turn this off.